Hello, welcome to another episode of Connected Tech Talks, the podcast from ITS. I'm Dave Ferry, and as always, I'm joined by Catherine McNamara as my co-host on this podcast. This one's a virtual one rather than a face-to-face one. The last couple we've done have been face-to-face. This is a departure back to the software and out of a room. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Carol Thomas, who is Director of Digital and ICT at Southend-on-Sea City Council. Welcome, Carol. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
This is the second kind of a public sector focus of our Connected Tech Talks that we've done. And it's kind of a big area that kind of ITS is looking at and investing in at the moment. So it's really great to have you here, Carol. And I guess first question is, could you tell us a little bit, first of all, about your role? What does a technology lead do in kind of local authority? What does that look like? Bring it to life for us.
I'm responsible for ensuring technology is a strategic enabler, so across all areas of the council. And as a unitary council in Essex, we also collaborate a lot with other public sector bodies across Essex to ensure that the region attracts inward investment. So it involves overseeing the digital transformation journey that we've been on for the last 4 years. It's embedding modern and user-centric solutions to improve delivery of solutions to our residents, to our local businesses, and to our employees. In a little bit more detail, so that's setting the vision and the roadmap for digital and IT, making sure it aligns with the council's strategic objectives, driving that modernization of legacy systems and processes with a focus on improving efficiency, accessibility, and sustainability. Wouldn't be anywhere near IT if I didn't talk about robust cybersecurity and data governance frameworks, making sure those are in place, collaborating with stakeholders across departments across the region to understand their needs and deliver technology solutions that will enhance their abilities. And lastly, leading on the development of infrastructure and connectivity to support both the council's operations and Southend's communities. And ultimately, I guess my aim is to create a technology landscape that empowers our users and delivers better outcomes for the people we serve.
How does one become a technology lead within a local authority? What's kind of your kind of backstory to some of this? Because often we find that when we speak to people, actually, it's kind of a little bit of a different road to what you'd perhaps envisage.
My career, as you can probably hear, started in South Africa, and I've been chief information officer in a number of central government departments in South Africa. So I was at their national audit office, their aviation regulator, their air traffic control and navigation services. And I've also worked there for a very large life insurer as chief information officer. And then I made the decision to move to the UK and ended up at Southend.
How did you find that transition?
It's actually been a really good transition. I mean, going to work in a local authority was probably not what I'd envisaged, but it's been a really good journey. I mean, we've been able to do an awful lot and achieve a great deal and make a difference. And I guess that's what drives me at the end of the day, is making a difference.
Absolutely. I've not been to Southend for a long time. There used to be, when I was young, there used to be a nightclub in Southend called Mayhem, and it was really appropriately named. That's my last dealings with Southend, and certainly in going there. I haven't been there for probably a good 10 years, so I'm sure that the town has come on leaps and bounds in that time. Obviously, Carol, we talk a lot about kind of job ID, we talk a lot about connectivity, digital connectivity, all of those kind of things. But when we think about that in the public sector, from your perspective, what does that kind of really mean?
For starters, it's about much more than just internet access. It's seamless, secure, resilient networks to enable the delivery of essential services and collaboration. I'm big on collaboration, so collaboration with other public sector organizations. We work a lot across the region. We work a lot with the colleges, the universities, other public sector bodies like the NHS, Fire, and some others. And connectivity is the backbone of everything we do, providing reliable systems and access to systems for those frontline workers and ensuring that residents can access services digitally as well.
And what kind of happens for those residents or those kind of employees and workers in the council or elsewhere in, I suppose, right across society, if that fabric that underpins it goes wrong or isn't set up in the right way?
Yeah, I guess then nothing really works as it should. Everything becomes that much harder to to do and outcomes are harder to achieve. So it really does form that backbone or foundation of what we need to deliver.
In your view, what are the essential kind of connectivity infrastructures that underpin local councils? So obviously your example is kind of in Southend and kind of in that kind of South Essex vicinity. It's really interesting that you've also kind of talked about the fact that you've held roles, obviously, kind of in South Africa as well. Just first of all, taking on that, the local authority piece for local councils, if we could talk about that, and then I'd probably quite like to jump back and just understand a little bit about some of the similarities and differences, actually, from a UK to a South Africa perspective.
I guess essential connectivity structures for the council would be high-speed broadband fibre networks, so they need to be reliable, robust and affordable and across both urban and rural areas. As you know, in South Essex, we've been working on extending gigabit-capable fibre networks to ensure equitable access and make sure we deliver platforms that can enable and improve the delivery of public services. Again, secure networks to facilitate and enable data sharing between government agencies. Cloud-based infrastructure is essential these days, I believe. So moving systems and data to cloud has been a major focus for us, which in turn allows us to be flexible and scalable for council services. And connectivity for remote or mobile workers has become a huge thing since COVID. And as hybrid working is embedded, making sure that staff can access mobile solutions is absolutely critical. And then again, there's the whole piece of digital literacy assistance for our residents via community centres, libraries, and in association with places like public health. All of these pieces of this enormous puzzle help us to support not just our internal ops, but also broader regional goals, which cover economic growth and digital inclusion.
Do you think there's still a gap in those skills for the residents who live in, I guess, in your area and others, in those digital skills? Is there still a big gap? Are you still finding that people are accessing that kind of support and need that support to make sure that they're not left behind?
We really are. We're finding a lot of gaps, and it's not always where you expect it to be.
Mm.
We're spending a lot of time and effort trying to set up community halls so that our residents can go there and access digital services easier.
So if we were to look back and just do a little bit of a comparison, how does the landscape differ between kind of South Africa and the UK in terms of connectivity and how, I guess, how advanced some of this stuff is within kind of their own kind of local government?
I think in terms of connectivity across South Africa, it possibly, maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but I think it was better set up. It's been a focus of the government since 1994 is connecting up public sector areas and making sure that there is access to digital via a form of connectivity. Although having said that, I think the mobile networks are much bigger than the fiber networks.
Okay.
But all public sector offices have got full fiber.
Yeah, I think from my reading up on the South African market, where the UK kind of chose to go for a fiber to the cabinet solution that was then still delivered by copper for the last mile in the late 90s in South Africa, they made the jump. The operators made the jump straight from copper to full fiber. So the rollout was quicker and earlier. But also, yes. I think when I've read up on kind of market conditions out in South Africa, operators found getting customers to take up that service was easier because there was such a big jump in capability from what had been to what now was. Everybody just kind of went straight onto it, which kind of made the economic case for a lot of the networks a lot quicker. Was that kind of what you saw when you were out there, Carol?
Very much is what I saw.
That's interesting. What's kind of the appetite been then with, I guess, some of the communities, business communities and I guess, kind of public sector users in Southend and kind of that wider South Essex area?
The business users are part of the bigger digital community that we have across there, and it varies widely. I was looking at some stats the other day that said that Southend is one of the most diverse areas in terms of the ways in which people want to communicate and want to run their businesses. So it forms a very unique set of challenges, I believe.
There's a heck of a lot of kind of background and kind of learnings that you obviously bring into your role, which is amazing for residents and amazing for partners being able to work with kind of the council as well. So what do you think needs to be in place to help businesses and residents in that digital world? We've picked up on kind of some of the educational bits. What infrastructure, anything else around the edges that you think would really drive that adoption forward? Or is it something that the industry needs to do?
Interestingly, there are still some urban knot spots which are possibly not being addressed as they should be. There are always the rural knot spots as well, but there's some urban knot spots that I think they're both an opportunity but also a challenge. Internet of Things networks, LoRaWAN is one example. I think those bring an awful lot of opportunity to do things differently, create new economic opportunities. Probably heard this one as well, using data, identify things early, stimulate proactive action, smarter delivery of service, and all of these things go, they're kind of part of a big puzzle. And I guess 4 and 5G network coverage, but also other mobile networks to fill in the gaps on the edges, access to digital hubs, going back to that community literacy development, helping people access the digital services. Access to connectivity on all developments, whether those are residential or business, because, again, there are some real gaps. And just taking people on a journey, because digital can be really scary for people. But if you can take them on a journey with you, then it becomes a lot less scary for them.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think we've done quite a bit of looking backwards, and your insights have been really good from your kind of varied career. If we flip it on its head and start looking forwards, obviously there's a whole lot of emerging technology coming out, generally underpinned by the fact that bandwidth's kind of available now whenever you need it in most locations, excluding those not spots you just talked about. What technology do you think is going to kind of have the biggest impact on the public sector in the coming years, Carol?
Well, none of this is going to surprise you. So artificial intelligence and machine learning, but applied carefully, with careful consideration of privacy, I believe this will make an enormous difference to service delivery and enable predictive analytics, automating routine processes, and generally providing personalized citizen services, freeing up the public servants to actually focus on other activities that could add more value. The other one I've already spoken about, the Internet of Things, I believe.
Do you think those two things kind of go together? So you kind of get you've got your IoT kind of technologies that maybe capturing some of that data, but then you kind of need some of that kind of machine learning or certainly algorithmic processing to take that data and make it insightful for someone to do something with it.
Absolutely. It's all part of a very complicated jigsaw puzzle, I believe, and it all works together. So it's pointless doing one piece without the others. You need to move it all forwards together.
How much work is kind of going on today to prepare for that in the future? Does that kind of form a big part of your thinking and your role at the moment, kind of getting ready for that to evolve and do more?
It very much does. We've got a data transformation strategy and project running at the moment to look at all our data, because that underpins how we're going to use AI and robotics in the future. And it's going to link up with the Internet of Things, and the data we gather through the Internet of Things will add to our data stores. And we need to know exactly what data we have and the source of it. Yeah, exactly. And then the other really interesting technology that I think is going to make a huge difference is digital twins. I think for the public sector, digital twins are going to be something that could make an enormous difference to planning and involvement of communities in what the public sector is planning on doing.
Just for the benefit of listeners that don't know what a digital twin is, could you kind of give us the... Have I just stolen your question, Dave?
No, I don't know what a digital twin is.
Oh, so. Right. For the benefit of Dave, who is on this interview...
I don't know what it means. I'm not going to come out of this knowing what it means. That'd be really, really useful.
Could you just give us a quick interpretation that brings it to life for us?
A digital twin, for example, of a city, say if we look at... is a digitized version of portions of the city. So if you're looking at, for example, building a new housing estate, you can format or program your digital twin to look at the impact that the more additional people will have on the need for medical services, for schooling, what impact it will have on the transport links, what it will do to traffic, And you can start plotting out additional changes you're going to need to make to all of those things.
That's really clever. I like that. And now I understand it. That's good. Because you're building a whole load of new houses where I live, but they're not building any new schools. And everyone's kind of like up in arms. Because all the schools are already oversubscribed. And the health centre, you can't get an appointment in unless you do the 8 a.m. crush and call in with everybody else that needs an appointment that day. But they're putting another 900 houses down the road. And everyone's kind of like, well, where's the public services? Where's some of the private sector stuff as well, like additional shops and stuff like that nearby?
I went to a really interesting event about 8 weeks ago, and they were talking about how digital twins were being used and how sometimes you look to like an alternative industry to see how things are working. And one of the examples they gave was that Amazon were doing such kind of testing on how they flux their resource up and down due to seasonality. So if you take kind of Manchester city centre as an example, what might they need to do over that Christmas period with an influx of different and bulkier products that are being ordered? And then they were taking some of those key learnings and they were flipping them into an NHS setting terms of actually, if you look at a hospital and you look at all the different care pathways that you can, and this is where it gets really interesting and you start to say, this is where the citizen can really start to benefit from it. And I think sometimes, and I don't know whether you see this, Carol, because obviously data share information, ethics around that, that's this massive kind of hurdle we've not even kind of spoken about, which is like fundamental. But actually, you can unlock some really great benefits from being able to trial some of this stuff and move it into these, you know, these environments that are buckling under traditional ways. And actually, how do you fail fast to make sure that you can see those benefits kind of see through? What piece of technology could you not live without?
Probably my mobile device. I have all sorts of pieces of my life contained within my mobile device.
Excellent. And one of the things we've been asking is for previous guests to share a question with us. We just wondered if we could ask you that question that's come up with some of our previous guests. And it was about, in this instance, piece of technology that was set for greatness that never actually materialized to its full potential. Have you got any examples of something you saw coming down the line that never quite made it?
I don't think blockchain has really quite made it. It's very
that's a great answer,
specialized
by the way.
In some areas it's made a difference, but I don't think it's been quite the success it was mooted to be.
Why do you think that was?
I think it's just too difficult for most people to get across and to build into the existing processes.
I think whenever I've tried to understand it and I've read up on it, I'm pretty bright with this stuff, but I can't get my head around it. And I think if you can't get your idea across in like a 30-second pitch, it's got no chance. I think you'd struggle to get blockchain across in a 30-second pitch. Anytime I've asked experts, they bore me for a while with some of the detail, and I'm kind of I just want to know what it means, and I can never get to the bottom of it.
Absolutely. And then I guess conversely, have you got a question that you would like to ask for one of our Onward guests that is a burning question from Southend?
Or from Carol.
Here we go. How would we use technology and connectivity to drive better social equity and inclusion across our communities?
I like that one. That one fits.
That's
really
a really
well.
Good question. Very good question.
Good job. We'll get some thoughts from some of our future
guests. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think that'll prompt quite a lot of.
I think so. I think probably a whole podcast all on that.
Again, yeah. Listen, I think that's a really great place to wrap up. It's been really great speaking to you, Carol, and getting some of those insights. Particularly loved the digital twin kind of deep dive. And thank you, Dave, once again. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you, Carol. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you both. It was a pleasure and I've enjoyed this immensely. Thank you very much.
Hopefully we'll see everybody on one of our future episodes. And remember to share, like, subscribe, and you'll catch us on Spotify, YouTube, Apple, and wherever else you consume your information, not forgetting the ITS website. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.